This is a production of Cornell University.
She's here.
Yes.
Yo.
Here.
Yes.
Are you Italian?
Here.
Yes. Unexcused.
Are you Italian?
Oh, is that it? Okay. So we're going to move straight to the SAFC presentation. They came to our meeting last week and presented proposed changes, and they're going to continue discussing them today. So Brandon, feel free. Larry. And whoever else from the SAFC wants to come up. Yeah, go for it.
Hey guys, so I'm Larry Sugoch, Ranger Coordinator, Ranger 2 President of the SFC. So we presented to you guys last week about all our proposed changes, and just to give you an update of what we've done since then. So essentially, this past Monday, we kind of held like a public forum for people to come and voice any concerns they had. So we had a good amount of presidents and treasurers show up, asked a lot of great questions, gave some comments. We've also had some emails from groups who had some questions and comments. So we've been keeping up with those. So I think in this package, it's probably easier for Neil's here, but I imagine there's a list of changes that we've made to the guidelines thing. None of the changes are really major. Anyone found a list yet?
It's right after the resolution. Appendix of resolution 42.
Yes, exactly. So a lot of these changes were minor. One of the changes that we did make some more major ones. So Adam Galletti made the point last time that groups might want price quotes, and kind of just to make sure that it doesn't hurt them at the end when they want to get reimbursed. So we decided to include that back in the guidelines so groups would have to submit price quotes. You know, it's not really that much extra paperwork, so we figured that'd be a good idea. One suggestion that actually a student group gave us during the forum on Monday was this notion of special cancellation request. And that's basically if a student cancels on you or you can't go to the tournament, you can essentially turn in a form, and then we don't use those funds towards your spending calculation. So some groups were concerned that you can't appeal that. So now we're going to allow groups to appeal that to the SBA Appropriations Committee. Talked to Adam, I talked to Roniel, and they both said that should be fine in terms of appeals. So that's just another added layer to make the process more fair. Just added some more details about negotiated rates to make sure that groups couldn't ask for like first class plane tickets and things like that. We added a decrease in price as an example of a reason for submitting a special cancellation request. So if you originally submit a request for $1,000 and every cost you $500, you can still submit the special cancellation request. I think that's generally it for major changes. And I guess I'd be happy to hear any questions or comments since hopefully you guys looked at the PowerPoint a little more in depth. And now is the perfect time for us to answer any questions you have.
Great. So is our Vice President of Outreach, Nate Feisen, is going to be going around with a speakers list if anyone would like to speak. But right now I'm opening up the speakers list for all SA members. So this has been kind of controversial. I know you guys had your thing on Monday. Did anyone reach out to you? Did you guys reach out to anyone else? Do you have any concerns of your own? Any questions for the SAFC? These are big changes, so we're not going to be voting on this week. We're waiting another week. Unless no one says anything. Yes, Executive Vice President Gitlin.
Do you think these changes addressed some of the concerns of people who came and spoke out at the forum earlier in the week?
Yeah, you know what? That actually was the driving force behind a number of these.
Okay.
I could speak specifically to the ability to appeal a special cancellation request. It's something that Larry and I had actually, and Roniel had devised on our own, but we never even thought the idea that it could be controversial, which is great. It was great insight that was provided from a president of two organizations who came and voiced that opinion and thought that should be added. We discussed it, that was a great idea at that room. I'm sure as we alluded to, I think that were direct results of input that we got over the course of this week, not only from the forum we did, but also through our website and our internal ticket system.
Just one more thing to add. So I guess a lot of the concerns were specific to groups, and they emailed us and we told them, if you're curious about your spending history, email us and we'll get back to you right away. Obviously, we haven't finalized tier places because we don't have a study history for this year yet, but I was able to give a pretty general sense of where they would fall.
Cool. Next on the speaker's list is William. How do you say your name? Yeah.
Sure.
So come up and say your first and last name and your year. You can grab a chair or stand, whatever you'd like.
I'm Jim Tunnelbus. I'm a senior. I'm the president of Sports Equity Club, and we I think we spend probably 100% of our budget every year in this industry. I just questions about the subjective criteria on tier one.
So it's subjective in the sense that it's kind of, you know, an opinion. I know Dara brought up a good point last week in the sense that, you know, how do we evaluate clubs in terms of, do we look at how many members they have, or do we say, well, it's only two members, we have a really great impact? And I think the key is finding balance. So the way that we decided to go about it is essentially kind of map out the criteria. So it's actually in Section 10 of the guidelines. That's the things that we're going to be looking at. There's no, you know, specific way to say right now exactly, you know, how we look at a group, but we know the criteria as to what we'll be using to analyze groups. So it'll really be just an informed judgment. I think that we have, you know, a commission of 30 people that can figure out what really would benefit Cornell campus. And that being said, if a group disagrees, they can still appeal to the provisions committee, so there's still a check at the end of the day on us.
So there will be transparency on the committee?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the goal is for every decision, we would write something up and tell groups exactly what we decided on, what we took into account, what kind of, you know, benefited the group, and what might have hurt the group in some sense. And, you know, I wouldn't want a process where we just say, no, you've been denied. I don't think that's fair. So I think that it'll be very important to make sure that every group gets an in-depth look.
Great. Does that answer all of your questions? Okay. Great. Next on the speakers list is Vice President of Finance, Adam Nicoletti.
So I just wanted to throw my, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, obviously, but I just wanted to throw out the issue that we were talking about in live a few days ago, which was when you have negotiated rates, so let's say for transportation, you know, what does the SAFC think when you give, let's say, whatever the negotiated rate is for mileage, and you get $50 from the SAFC, but your gas receipt ultimately ends up being $40, even though you're funded based on the amount of travel that you do because gas prices fluctuate in rates. So what would a student group have to do if they spent less than what the SAFC gave them based on the amount of, and maybe describe the issue that I'm talking about.
You want me to describe it again? Okay. Just in summary, so the issue Adam brought up is essentially, so we fund for, let's say, a group wants to travel, we fund based on the amount of miles they travel per person. But then when groups want to get reimbursed, they actually have to submit like a gas receipt. Obviously, there's no way to make sure that you know, there's no way to predict gas prices. We want to make sure that this doesn't hurt student groups. And obviously, we're not going to develop a system that hurts them that wouldn't make sense. And we still haven't finalized how we're going to do that. One way is special cancellation request, but I think that's kind of, you know, clumsy way to do it. That means every group would have to submit one. So one thing that we can consider is if it's an issue of a negotiated rate versus a receipt, we just take kind of what the groups, you know, what they tell us, and then use that and assume it's like 100% spending. So we still have to finalize that, but obviously we're not going to devise it in a way to hurt groups because that wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, obviously More of just something to throw out to the room to think about in the future, but overall, in terms of discussion about this, I think that this funding proposal has been thought about a lot. I think the SAFC has been very, very thoughtful in how they've approached this issue. They put a lot of time and effort into this, and I think that this is really a big leap forward in terms of what the SAFC is going to be providing to students, not only in ease of funding, but also just their overall experience with the SAFC. So I commend you for that, and I would urge people to ask more questions, because this is a big document, and there are a lot of intricacies in this that may affect students that are unforeseen. But in terms of everything I've seen, I think that this is a good piece of legislation.
So, student trustee Boris, come up to the front if you'd like.
Thank you. I just had a question about the tier structure. So the numbers in here say, like, example for how much they'll each be set at. So how do you actually decide what the limits are for each tier?
So it depends on two things. It depends on how many groups end up falling in each tier, and that's going to be decided essentially when all these reimbursements are cleared. We can place groups into tier. So that's the first component of it. And the second component of it is we have to see how much it actually applied for in the fall. Because if there's a huge increase, let's say, in application, then obviously that'll drop down the numbers on the entry. If people apply for less than they have in the past, it'll drop up the numbers. Also depends on the new groups. But one of the issues we're talking about is kind of this issue of continuity and knowing what's going to happen before you apply. So one thing we talked about is the beginning of the semester. So groups would know what tier they're in, and we would give them a range of caps. It might be a big range, like a range of $1,000 or $1,500, but we'll say, you know, you're going to get between, so tier three will get between $2,000 and $3,500, and you should apply accordingly. Because as of right now, we do nothing like that, which is kind of why so many groups have been upset. So that's essentially how we're going to start it.
Next on the speaker's list is Representative Brown. Again, if anyone that's sitting in the audience wants to talk, just raise your hand so you're on the speaker's list.
Hi, guys. Thank you guys for bringing together and doing so much time. I think it's great to see legislation. I have some questions just about kind of taking a few steps back. When you first started to kind of draft down these plans and create the student system, do you have any evidence from other universities or similar amount of organizations or body, or what was your starting point?
So I guess the starting point is, you know, kind of what Larry alluded to before, is just the inherent problem that we have X amount of dollars. It increases by an arbitrary amount, maybe 2 or 3% with ASCOM every year. But we have this huge influx of number of new groups applying every year. So, you know, with a raw average, as you know, the system, the way it is now, you know, caps come down. So I think you mentioned this before, but last semester alone, there was $225,000 of unspent funds. And, like, you know, we haven't taken any initiative to go and look at, you know, other campuses or any similar issues, but, like, our main goal is the issue that's facing our commission here on campus now, and $225,000 of money that groups ask for and didn't spend that could go to other groups who need it. That's our biggest thing. So that's what we're trying to combat, and we're really excited to see, you know, if this goes, you know, in the organization, it does pass through you guys, you know, how much more efficiently we're going to start spending our money in the university.
So we did look at some universities. We specifically did look at Harvard. And the way that they do it is they have pretty much like one Adam Nicoletti and one appropriations committee, and their bottom tier is $0. So most student organizations there get nothing, and they only fund like the top organizations that are, they basically only give money to filing-funded organizations, and all student groups have to front the money themselves. And like in no way, shape, or form was that like our perspective. If anything, like we're totally against it. That's why we have the SAFC as the filing-funded organization. But it did show us that, you know, it does make a little bit more sense to have some structure where the larger organizations that are always hitting the cap and have room to expand have some sort of system in place for them to get more money.
We also looked at UNC. They have a kind of like a big club sports presence on campus, and they actually also had a tiered system And they had a tier system that was kind of more subjective, and we kind of wanted to base our performance tier on something like that. But one of the hardest problems with our system is just the amount of groups, and not that many schools actually have 500 organizations that apply for funding every year. So I think we look at other schools, but I think we also want to make sure that we address our problems.
Just quickly, I think that's a great idea. I think that's a lot got into it, but seeing if, let's just say that it's implemented or something went wrong, you found out the drastic issue with it, at least you're still performing it, and then you go back to the original system at the end of the year and start it.
So I think that, especially this year, the SAFC has shown its ability to be organic and respond to not only the rest of the university, but like its own changes. So like as you all voted on, or most of you voted on, last year we decided to implement annual budgets. The feedback from groups was overwhelmingly against it. The feedback from commissioners was overwhelmingly against it. So that was a change that we were able to revert back from in less than a year. While I think me, Larry Grandin, and the rest of the commission are very confident in these changes moving forward, in no way, shape, or form is it like we're committing to this for 5 years, and if everything hits the fan, then it will. We are very receptive to change.
Thank you, guys.
Next on the speakers list is future Executive Vice President Mueller.
Hi. first of all, excuse me if this comes out incoherently. I took a red eye bath last night, so I haven't slept a lot. But for this coming year, people will be placed in tiers 2 through 5. You're not going to have people in tiers 1 and tier 6, from what I understand. Okay, great. So main point is that there's nobody in tier 1 right now, which makes a lot of sense. It gives people some mobility, and that way you're not funding at the highest capacity yet. But I guess my question is, theoretically, because there's nobody in that top cap, all of the caps should be higher this first year. What is the plan sort of when next year people move into tier one and all of a sudden these groups who have come to expect sort of a reasonable level of funding from each tier, and it all of a sudden drops because there's all this, another higher tier.
So a couple points on that. So the first thing, the reason we don't have anyone in tier one is because we can't, we don't have the information to. If you take a look at the performance reporting criteria, there were things that we're asking some groups to send in, and while last call might have that information, or CAIS or another huge plus sports, a lot of the organizations that would be eligible just based on their spending history may not have attendance for every event that they throw and things like that. So we're going to be able to alert groups in Tier 2 at the beginning of the year. If you want to apply for Tier 1 at the end, here are things that you need to start tracking now. So that was the main rationale behind not putting anyone in Tier 1 originally. The rest of the shifting caps idea, I think the general logic behind that is in every year, undoubtedly, you're going to have people moving up tiers, but you're also going to have people moving down tiers. And the people moving down tiers is creating the money to reallocate upward. Obviously, if we need to, there might be a year where, 50 groups move up and no one moves down, and that'll be reflected in the tier system.
Okay. I think your concern is, what happens when all these groups move to tier one, takes amongst everyone else? Yes, it does, but the way we envision it is, it's not going to be so many groups, and ultimately the cap for tier one won't be that much higher. We're not saying that the tier one cap is going to be $10,000. It's going to be a little higher than everyone else, so yes, it might reduce it a little bit, but nothing drastic.
Okay, great, thank you.
So for everyone that just came in, if you'd like to speak, just raise your hand. Nate Trefison, our Vice President of Outreach, will come and get your name, and you can speak to the SAFC commissioners about any questions or concerns. Next on the speakers list is Representative Muir.
Future EVP Mueller, you're going to ask, but I guess I was interested in the mechanism for changing tiers. So you have the credit score, and you have the tier score, right?
Efficiency spending and the tier spending.
So I guess my concern is, would this type of scoring for this mechanism, would this incentivize groups to spend excessively? And if so, how do you respond to that?
Sure. Brought up this question. Last week. That was one of the biggest concerns we had originally. But So two things. Number one, groups can't just spend money on whatever they want. Like, we have a specific guidelines, and they can only spend money on things they apply for in their budget and then have actual receipts for. And then on top of that, you'd be surprised, like, how many groups just, like, spend $0 of what we give them. And realistically speaking, we don't see every single group applying for their match. Because if a group applies for their match, they know that, oh, well, what if we don't spend it? Then we're going to be hurt. So they're going to be afraid to just apply for everything they can because the groups wouldn't want to move down here. So I think, like, yes, some groups will say, you know, we're going to apply for the max and I'm confident we can spend it. And, like, that's fine at the end of the day because they're spending it on things that we fund for and that we want groups to spend this money anyway. And at the end of the day, if it benefits the group and it benefits the campus, then we're all for it. But realistically speaking, we don't think that every single group is going to do that.
I mean, at the end of the day, if a group has $200 left in their account and this change gets them to go out and spend that $200, it's doing more good than rolling over, since everything we fund for is, like, you know, by definition, something that benefits campus.
Great. Next on the speakers list is Cameron Younger. If you want to come to the front, state your name, your organization, that'd be great.
All right, so good afternoon, everyone. My name is Cameron. I'm here as the chair of CU tonight, but I'm also here just as a legitimately concerned member of the Cornell community. As you can see by my polo, I was an SAFC commissioner. I use the term was because I resigned. Whether or not they know that's a different story, I've still been on the listserv for a while, so that's fine. The reason why I expressed issues with this, I did express issues as a commissioner to the commission about this tiered system, mainly because SAFC is not an elected body, it's not elected by the students. And the main issue here is that what's going to end up happening with the tier system, in my opinion, is there's going to be some form of micromanaging that has to take place in order for the tier system to work through the appeals process, allowing organizations to move up and down the tier. I personally believe that this is going to end up stunting the growth of organizations on campus. By placing somebody into a tier, you're telling them this is how much money that you can have. I've read the whole thing. I've seen how groups can apply to move up and down. It doesn't exactly work that way for every single student organization. Not everybody is structured that way, and to tell people that they can only apply for X amount of money every single year when they're trying to change what they do, grow, get bigger, or get smaller, doesn't help the community. To sum all this up, to be completely honest, SAFC is not fully representative of the Cornell community itself. I don't know if you guys did find another underrepresented minority male to take my place on the commission, but I was the one and only when I was there. As far as black and Latino males go, and I don't think that spot has been filled since I left, which is a problem, because if you're going to start judging organizations across the community, then you need a commission of people across the Cornell community to make the decisions fair so that everybody has an equal playing field. I've since resigned for the simple fact that this tier system isn't what I signed up for. I signed up for it so that smaller organizations had a chance to get in the funding that they need to put on big events for the community. I didn't sign up so that I could dictate how much money that they had. I didn't sign up so I could micromanage them. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. We really appreciate it.
So, Cameron, I'll start addressing some of your concerns. So first of all, yes, you know, we did obviously notice your presence, or absence rather, because the commission is 30 people, and I think that you know, the fact that we haven't removed you from the listserv, I don't think you should take offense to that. So yes, the Student Assembly Finance Commission is, you know, the way we take applicants is by an application and interview process and open for all to apply. And the reason that has worked in the past is it's really a very objective system, and I think that's part of the reason that these guidelines are such a thick document, because at the end of the day, you know, in our consideration of creating a system, we at one point threw out the idea, well, maybe we should make every single tier placement subjective, and we didn't want to do that. So what we needed was people who were dedicated and people who could sit down and, you know, be very realistic with the numbers and make an informed decision. Whether we want to have some elected positions on the commission is a whole separate issue, and, you know, I'd be glad to talk to you about that, and we can talk with the rest of the SA as something else going forward. So one thing you also talked about is limiting groups. But essentially what we have right now is one tier. So we're limiting groups right now. We're limiting them in a way where we say, you can apply for as much money as you need. Apply for $100,000. But at the end of the day, we only give you $2,000. So literally, groups will fill out budgets of $20,000 with no guidance, and then we essentially say, well, we can only give you this much. So the tier system is not designed to hurt small groups. It really is not. And because small groups, if we have low for everyone, like a small group that wants to become a larger group is hurt at the end of the day. The tier system is to like make sure that every group falls in their right kind of spending category where they need spending. And if a smaller group wants more money, in the future they can get it with this group. I think that's some of your concerns. I don't know if anyone else wants to address any others.
Yeah, besides that. So, first of all, the notion that the SAAC is not electively represented, that's why the SAAC cannot unilaterally change a single word in their guidelines. The Student Assembly, which is a popularly elected, is the only body that has that right to do it, which is why, if it were only up to Brandon and Larry, then we wouldn't be here. At the end of the day, we're convincing the SA, as are all of you, in order for them to vote what they think is right. So that's my first point. The second thing about the tier system hurting small groups, I think you hit the key point, which is that small groups need time and resources to grow, and I completely 100% agree. You know, to me, if I look at a group that has spent $1,000 a year for the past 8 semesters, $500 a year for the last 8 semesters, and I look at a group that has been capped at $5,000 a year for those semesters as well. And the question to me then is that group that's applying for the cap but only spending $500, is that $4,500 better spent going to the group that is getting capped and giving the group that has historically spent $500 a semester a lower cap that is still higher than what they've already spent with the ability to move up? Like, how are we actually benefiting campus more? And I think at the end of the day, that's the decision that the assembly has to make. I think the SAFC has decided, based on our experience working with the commission and with groups, that this is going to be the way that groups will benefit most, because looking at the data, we just don't have groups that go from spending $500 a semester, 4 years in a row, to going to spending $6,000. Like, you need to build up over time. You need to develop the skills to learn how to spend that money. Like, going back to Don's question, spending, you can't just find things to spend money on. You have to actually program and execute, and I think groups need time to learn how to do that.
Right, and I think that diversity and representation is definitely a concern that should be acknowledged and recognized, and I think going forward that definitely goes hand in hand with the new guidelines and the changes that the SAFC is really trying to make right now. I think that's a really great point and something that the assembly, this year's assembly, next year's assembly should keep in very close in mind as we move forward.
Do I have like 10 seconds left?
Yeah, sure.
I guess my last thing is that Natalie, I guess, referenced like diversity, both not only in members on the commission but in groups. We actually do incorporate for the fact that groups that represent underrepresented students or underrepresented communities should be considered into tier placement. So one of the subjective tier criteria is unique contribution to campus, and that was put in specifically for that reason. So if you're representing a group of students that is not represented by other organizations, that should be taken into consideration.
Also, as you move forward, especially as you're starting to build up your new commission and get more people, I think a great outreach campaign, working with the SA as well as a lot of organizations on campus that have identified the need to have more representation within the SA, would be a great goal moving forward. And something maybe, Cameron, if you still feel, since you still have your red polo, maybe you can help us out a little bit with that effort. Great. All right, next on the speakers list is Representative Hoffman.
Yeah, so my question I had is, since you start with no groups in that top tier group, like as more groups start to apply and then move into tier one, you mentioned earlier that the caps are going to change based on the number of groups, so they'll decrease. So when you have that decrease, doesn't it become easier for groups then to meet that cap level and then continue to move up? And when they move up, the caps continue to decrease and move down until you kind of have everybody at like the highest cap, which is actually kind of a lot lower though?
So the thing there, and I think Larry was alluding to this earlier, is we don't expect every single group to fly up to Tier 1 in the course of 4 years. And the reality of it is, like, if you look at past spending, groups have been able to spend $5,000 and they've only had spent, you know, $500 or $1,000 or whatever it may be. And it doesn't make sense to apply for more than what you actually need, because if you don't spend it, you'll be moving down. So what we actually expect is to kind of reach like an equilibrium where groups are happy with the level of spending they're at. You know, if they ever did want to move up, then they would just apply for more funding that year. And then they'd be able to move up a tier.
Also, one other thing is, so groups can't just all move into Tier 1.
Yeah.
After every year, if you're in Tier 1, we're still evaluating you as to whether you stay in Tier 1.
Yeah.
To make sure there are not too many groups, you know. We don't want 100 groups sitting in Tier 1 taking the most money.
And I guess like a very last note is, we don't actually specify that Tier 1 is the only performance tier. So in the future, like if the entire process were to get very top heavy, mm-hmm. you did have those like small groups of five people that are like, I don't know, flying to Hawaii or something like that and being the cap because of it, then you know we would be able to expand the performance criteria to maybe Tiers 1 and 2. And that would be something that might have to happen, you know, 4 or 5 years down the line.
Then it almost becomes completely subjective though, doesn't it? When you have a
No, not if you're eliminating the amount of groups in them. So,
yeah. I guess the beauty of our process, what I really appreciate, is the fact that there's, you know, it is in a sense a little bit complicated, which is, you know, a concern from before, but there are a couple moving levers. Like, there are percentages associated with the vision spending score and the tier spending score that you know, will be voted on, but those, if they become an issue, the SASC will, you know, hand up, you know, in years to come, maybe legislature or suggestion that if we're seeing too much influx, then we can just simply, you know, change the dials on our requirements for efficiency spending or tier spending to make it, you know, more easier or, you know, more difficult for groups to move up or down based on demonstrated need and performance, so we can keep things balanced out.
So that's the end of the speakers list. Is there anyone else in the audience, SASC commissioners, anyone else that would like to say something to SASC, or someone that that has already spoken that would like to get on the second speakers list? Yeah.
Have you guys ever just considered something on just like a sort of per student base? Like we're a club with more people, we get more funds rather than just more, you know, like.
Yeah, so the biggest, I guess the basic consideration with that would be integrity of the system. We were worried about padding membership. And that would be as easy as you going to the hotel school and passing around a, you know, thing in your class saying that, yeah, you know, I have all my friends sign it, and all of a sudden your group that you started 2 days ago has 1,500 people in your membership. So that is a good idea. We were just wondering, in terms of a validity standpoint, how hard that would be to execute.
If you look at the performance criteria, we don't place any one thing as more important than another. You could have a club of 400 people, but if they're not really doing anything, are they more valuable than a club sports team that has, you know, 15, 20 people and is winning national championships every year? I just don't think you can unilaterally measure a club by just that one metric.
Ari?
So, a question I had about the most recent proposal requires hearings to be held for allocation decisions, but not for other placement decisions. And I was wondering if you could comment a little bit about the meaning behind that. And the reason I ask is because it seems like this year having hearings after a decision was rendered, but before there was an appeal to the SA, resulted in a lot of misunderstandings being sorted out early and much fewer.
So
much fewer disputes that had to go through the SA.
So you're talking about appealing performance?
Tier placement and the special cancellation request, I believe the policy doesn't require either of them to have hearings first before complaining.
Well, for the special cancellation, I mean, we're essentially, we're looking at their applications where we're doing it first, so you're saying if we had a question about a special cancellation request, would we allow them to come in? Is that what you're alluding to?
Or before the group appeals, if it doesn't agree with the SAC's decision, should it have an opportunity, just like with an allocation decision, for a hearing with the SASC so that appropriations doesn't need to look at that issue until the SAFC has met in person with the group and made a decision.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great question. So if the allocation decision actually needs to be the same, where you could appeal to the SAFC before you appeal to Appropriations Committee, that was changed in the spring of 2009. Sorry, the spring of 2010. And the reason for that was because, in essence, like, the SAFC was making an objective or, like, you know, a decision about how you were allocating. You would come and make the case that they already understood. They would never change their mind, and then it would go to AFSCOM. And it was a step in the process that was unnecessary. I think the efficiency that Ari is alluding to this year in appeals was that we're allowing the group to submit extra documentation. So there's a function to the appeal with the SAFC. But I, you know, very few times this year, we can speak from experience, did we actually ask questions about how a group was funding. I would say a large majority of appeals were just, or a large majority of hearings were just turning in documents.
Ultimately, I think for the social cancer assurance request, you get 99% of the information you need from a piece of paper that just explains, you know, why we shouldn't take these funds into account.
100%.
I mean, you can't tell me. Certainty, but, like, you can probably say 99%, you know, see your cancers on you, they tell us that. And if we ask them, you know, there could be a more informal process where we're like, we'll email a group, but just to maintain efficiency, I think it would, you know, them submitting their application is enough.
Right. That's time. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on the first speaker's list? All right. Moving on to the second speaker's list, Vice President of Finance, Nick Letty.
Two quick questions. For calendar 13, by the last day of class in any semester, the commission will adopt the calendar. So you do it in the spring for the fall, and then the fall for the spring. It says by the last day of class in any semester, the commission adopts a calendar of events and deadlines consistent with these funding guidelines. Is that meant to say the first day of class in any semester? When are you setting the calendar for the calendar period?
The wording, correct me if I'm wrong, says we set it at the last, so like we would set it at the last day of the spring semester for the deadlines in the fall. Right? And then the fall, at the end of the fall semester, we set a deadline for the spring. Just to make sure groups have enough time to look at it and see the deadline. So.
Okay. I would maybe clarify in the next time for the next period or something like that, just to clarify.
Oh, okay. So this is like a wording entry?
Just to clarify.
I'll make it
the other question I had was, When can the student body expect that initial tier placement is going to finalize?
So the reimbursement deadline is the May 8th. Yeah. Right. So we can't really do anything until then. That being said, I think so May 8th, and then we need a little bit of time. I think honestly, a lot of this can be done over the summer. I know that sounds unrealistic, but like we have almost everything ready for the tier question. We just need like the actual numbers to like plug it into a spreadsheet to make those decisions, and then we can do it and have it out, you know, a few weeks before the semester starts. Because I mean, often I would say most groups don't think about their budgeting until like at least the first day of class.
Yeah, I would definitely encourage earlier rather than later, just because resolve any issues that may come up about that. And then just, you know, generally about the comments that Cameron made and you guys followed about it, I think the ultimate philosophy difference in the tier system versus what we have now is we're essentially limiting the growth of new groups to a certain extent compared to the current system to avoid the slashing of current group budgets. So which one do you prefer? Do you prefer new groups having a little bit more accelerated growth at the expense of existing groups that have their programming cut down, which they did in the previous year? So I think that's a philosophy thing. And I personally think that slashing the existing programming is worse than limiting the potential new program. But, you know.
All right, so that's the end of the second speaker's list. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? All right, if not, I'm going to table this. Oh, Representative Frieden. Sorry, took me a second. You have 2 minutes.
To go off what you mentioned earlier, you know, about like the subjective, like the value add to campus, in terms of the tier placement, I think that's something that would quell a lot of the concerns that groups are having about where they're going to be initially placed in the coming year. Like even if
they knew that that was going to be taking place, and it wasn't just based on the nominal spending that we have, you know, expected. I was looking, I don't see it in your guide, the guide that SASB funding for fall 2012, and I think if you added that, like, a section about that in, I think that's called a lot of your fears. Also, is it possible to touch on a little bit more?
You're talking about the uniqueness for the performance tier determination?
So the
or initial tier placement?
Initial tier placement. I would, it was my understanding that there was like a level of subjectivity. Is it only for
no, only for our performance tier. There is no subjectivity in initial tier placement. And the reason behind that was we just, you know, didn't think that's a fair way to go about it. I think the whole point of our proposal is we're looking at their actual hard spending numbers that you can't argue with. And I think if we started taking unique contribution to campus with 500 groups, it would literally be impossible.
And again, like I told Representative Mueller, or future Executive Vice President Mueller, we don't have the information to do it. As far as how that cost will work in the future, it's on page 3 of the guide here at SASB budget application and in section 10 of the guideline proposal.
So it's only for the performance year, tier 1.
This will not exist in the first year. This will have an entire first year system established to, you know, prove themselves.
And for us to collect, to have a production
plan. All right, next on the speaker's list is Representative Scalfo.
Hello, thank you. Just reading through this, and just want to give you a quick comment, and not really a suggestion, but I serve on the executive board of CUDA, which is a Cornell Union for Disability Awareness, and in judging whether or not events are accessible, we would really appreciate if you would reach out to us if you need help in determining whether or not an event was accessible, and if you ever need help with telling groups when planning events how to make their event accessible, because that's what we're here for, and we use this as a resource for helping plan accessible events so that we can promote acceptance, awareness, and inclusion of students with disabilities.
No, we really appreciate that. Maybe that's part of our criteria. Maybe we have a link to your organization.
Sure.
If it's
because I know as it stands, when organizations are applying for funding, they say, have you considered accessibility when planning this event? And it's really a yes or no type thing, like, yeah, whatever type of thing. It's not really enforced. And there is a link on that page to our executive board listserv, which we actually have received zero emails about. So maybe it's something that we could do together to hopefully improve awareness and disability consideration. I think that'd be really great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even, you know, it's in the performance tier criteria too.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah, so
that came directly out of conversations with all of us.
The only thing I would just state is the fact that actual hard performance tier application won't be coming in until roughly a year from today.
Okay. But there's a lot can be done.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Great. So when you start identifying groups that could be performance tier, maybe you could have them reach out to us so that they can ensure that they can make it to performance tier with outstanding criteria when they're considering events and having accessible events.
Great. So that's now the end of our second speaker's list. Does anyone else want to speak? All right. Seeing none, we're going to table Resolution 42 till next week. It will be the first agenda item of business of the day. So I hear that SASB will be releasing a video about the changes hopefully very soon. Yes? Potentially?
Potentially.
But as long as you guys keep communicating these changes, I think next week will be interesting, but a great way to hopefully pass these changes so we can get this conversation moving and the funding request in place. So thank you guys so much for coming, and again, just where places to make comments.
So SASC at Cornell.edu. We're constantly reading those. So if you have questions about the proposal or any groups that you guys are in, and you know, you're worried about something, just email us and we'll get back to you.
Or cornellsa.com, which has an overview of the entire process, how we've been collecting feedback, what changes we've been making as we've gotten more feedback, an overview of the proposals. So I would definitely check that out as well. Thank you to Nate who put that together.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Great. Okay, so we'll see you here next week.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hopefully in the memorial room. We'll let you know.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
All right. We're going to move to approval of the March 12th, 2000 meeting minutes. Are there any comments or motions on the floor?
Motion to approve.
There's been a motion to approve. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing none, the March 12th meeting minutes have been approved. Moving on to Section 3, open microphone. Is there anyone in the audience that isn't on the agenda already that would like a chance to speak? All right, seeing none, we're going to move on to announcements and reports. Before we have our C4 recap, I'm just going to give a shout-out to Nate and Mohit. They did an amazing job with C4. I know it took a lot of effort, but beautiful day. A ton of people came out, so congratulations, and we thank you for your hard work. So now for your C4 recap.
That was the recap.
Thanks,
Natalie.
No problem. So in the last couple of weeks, I think I meant to do this earlier, but we're going to be giving shout-outs to representatives about things that you've done. The hard work has not gone unnoticed, so we'll be shouting out to you guys in the next couple of weeks before we end the semester. Moving on to new business, resolution four. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so tomorrow is Spring Fest, so I think I invited you all. It's the big Earth Day celebration that I've been working on with the Sustainability Month Planning Board, which is like Walking Ability Hub and USC and a lot of other organizations on campus, and bringing together a lot of environmental organizations on campus, and maybe food, ice, and like activities for the food and it's all to the water.
Great. Great. Is there any other announcements and reports? Cool. We're going to move on to new business. Resolution 44, changes to SA bylaws by Representative Rao, Vice President of Internal Operations.
So, a bunch of us met a couple of times throughout the semester to take a look at our committee. And committees kind of take up a lot of our time. We do a lot of good work through our committees. But if you have committees that really are not producing anything and that aren't meeting, then we can better allocate our resources with you guys and all of us to places where they can be better used. So, Adam, Mohit, Natalie, John, Ross, and I, and if I forgot you when you were there, we sat down a couple times to discuss this, and I wanted to present to you some of the changes that we'd like to make to our bylaws. So I can walk through those now unless you guys have any questions. After the resolution page, I'll just walk you through everything and then take some time for questions and comments, and we can present it again next week and hopefully
it's not the track.
The first big change that we made was to the CIT committee. The fourth page is the bylaws under Article 6. So you can see the changes that I made on the right-hand side. The purpose of this committee seems kind of outdated. And it's also a committee that I've only met once this semester. So Adam has spoken to the Chief Information Officer, and Ted Dodds, I think his name is.
Yep.
And he has kind of a new vision for the CIT committee. So rather than completely scrapping the CIT committee, we'd like it to function more like some of our review committees actually do, meeting multiple times, communicating with the relevant administrators, and they're going to work on issues such as the technology strategic plan and then other things that come about. Some other changes to be made. This committee will be staffed on an ad hoc basis at the discretion of the EVP. I'd like that to be changed to say the committee will be staffed on an ad hoc basis by the Vice President of Internal Operations, because the VP IOP staffs the committee, but at the discretion of the EVP, meaning should we staff this committee this year? Because if there's no, you know, we can leave it open if there's no point in having a committee, having a chair, then we want to keep that flexible. Also, I lowered the membership requirements from 10 students of the community at large to 3, because I think we're not going to find, having, you know, staff committees myself, I don't think we found 3 members, even 3 this year, that wanted to serve on it. So that's something we can talk about. We're supposed to be 3 SA members. I don't think we had 3, so I changed that to 1. And there's supposed to be one, before there was 1 staff member from CIT and 1 student staff member from CIT. I don't think we need both a staff member and a student staff member, but that's also something we can discuss. Do you guys want to discuss these individually, or should we go through all the changes? Okay.
Yeah, let's go through all of the changes.
Moving forward, we got the environmental committee. We discussed the role of the environmental committee and what we're supposed to stand about this. And the environmental committee does serve the professional campus, but there are a lot of other organizations that are, you know, heavily invested in environmental issues across campus, and primarily one would be the sustainability hub. The one change that we thought appropriate would be to make the chair of the environmental committee also a liaison to the sustainability hub. And also, because the environmental committee doesn't meet as frequently, and a lot of the work that they do is via email, that we don't think it should be technically like a review committee, or it should still be you know, the committee that it is, but we're going to call it an ad hoc committee. So, you know, if they want to meet once a month and do a lot of work through email, they can meet as much as they want or as little as they want. So there's no point in having a committee that meets every 2 weeks if there's nothing to discuss every 2 weeks, because that's the way it's better. So that's about all we did for environmental. I think there's more here. 1 second. Yeah. I think that's basically it.
So and the SARC.
Oh, right. And SARC completely scrapped.
Can you explain what SARC is for other people that may not know?
So the SARC, Student Assessment Organizational Review Committee, was a committee that was supposed to meet to examine student organizations.
To examine new student organizations and review existing student organizations at least once every 3 years.
But I think the conclusion was it's politically infeasible to cut any kind of duplication.
It took a lot of time to review even, say, 10 organizations in a Sunday afternoon with the committee. Mm-hmm. And then whenever you found a conflict, you know, there was never like enough people opposed to it to bring it to the assembly and actually even do anything. So we just figured that it, while in theory is great, in practice it's not.
Yeah.
And I guess overall, the whole idea behind this is we now have an assembly with task forces, which are taking up time. We have, you know, many committees that do meet frequently, and I personally think it's better that if we have, you know, 6 committees that are doing great work, rather than have 10 committees, 5 of which aren't really meeting at all and serving any purpose. I think it's better to concentrate our resources on what's current and relevant, and that's through our task forces and the committees that we need to have every year. You know, let's put people in those positions.
Great. So just to recap, the 3 big changes to our own bylaws have to do with the Committee on Information and Technologies, kind of restructuring the committee a little bit and working with the recently appointed Vice President of Information and Technology, Ted Dodds, who's very willing to work with students. The second is making the Environmental Committee a liaison position, since there's already the sustainability having a lot of work already going on by other students, so we don't want to duplicate our efforts. And the third is getting rid of SARC, because not only is it not, it's very hard for another student organization to tell another student organization not to exist, but it also is a waste of our membership time and effort. First on the speakers list is Representative Kay.
Actually, 1 second. Yeah. Nicoletti is actually supposed to be chairing this meeting because we're all sponsors.
Okay. Go for it.
Go for it.
Does anyone not want to pass this thing?
Okay. No, okay. I'm going to chair it because I'm not.
I'll take all you off, so I don't
know. Yeah, I'm just going to chair it. First on the speakers, this is Representative Kay.
So I just want to elaborate on why I think that why for not having an environmental committee be such a structured committee. I think that it's really hard to get things done without funding. And I think that this is more important for the chair of the environmental committee to be an advocate for all the environmental folks on campus and for the person who's in charge to really be in touch with these two organizations and to advocate on their behalf if somebody, for example, wants to cut the house or advocacy funding. So that's the biggest issue, and I think that there wasn't really a need to meet all the time. There was a lot of opportunities for collaboration with organizations that did have funding that were able to, we're right now working on a video module with the USC and the Lilly Hub and Slope Media to like teach people, it's going to be like alcohol wise, teach people how to be like, sustainable in the dorm on campus. So I think it's more important for us to have one person who, and maybe board members in the committee. I think it's more important to have people who are involved in these organizations. And the issue that I had was a lot of people who were involved in the environmental committee weren't in touch with what was going on in the environmental club on campus. So it was kind of hard to mobilize people for certain causes who didn't really know was out there. So I think this is more important. I think this is a really change.
Great.
Can I ask Jen a question?
You have like 10 seconds.
Okay. Do you think it's better to have a committee, or is it better to just have a chair or a liaison?
What I would really like to see is having a committee, but not. While I do think it's important to have an open source for the community, I think that it's really important that we have some sort of. So the Sustainability Hub is not really the hub of all environmental organizations. It's called the hub, but it's not really. I think it would be really awesome if we had a committee with the president of the USC, the president of Theater Now, the president of Just Take Back the Tap, or yeah. So I think that would be a more effective way of coordinating initiatives on campus. But having a bunch of people who are just not involved in these student organizations makes it a little bit more difficult.
All right, next on the speaker's list is Director of Elections, Robert.
Hi, so I just want to speak to the Elections Committee, or the Environmental Committee Substitute, because I was the Environmental Committee Chair a few years ago. And I think one thing that I found very difficult, because I saw the body as like something where everyone could organize and unite, because Sustainability Hub really isn't. There's Kyoto Now, there's a bunch of different environmental groups on campus. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that like kept people from wanting to be a part of that committee, though, was that it was chaired under someone from the SA, and that I'm just like imposing myself as like chair of all these other groups. So I think maybe if you were to work some sort of like co-chair position out with the president of these other organizations, or you know, even just a member of these other organizations, that would be a better situation and it'd be more successful.
A liaison position.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, that's the...
multiple organizations.
A lot of organizations. There are a lot
like
of...
Instead of one liaison to, like, say, Sustainability Club, like, have a liaison that works with all of those groups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I'm going to
elaborate on that really quickly. We have the Sustainability Month Planning Board right now, and that's been a really great way of bringing people together who are involved in a lot of different organizations on campus. And I think that if we, Director of Elections Robert said, it is a lot more effective if we get the people who are directing the organizations in one room together. And I think that if you make it, it's create an organizational culture of where it's not like the chair is superior to the other presidents, I think that you can really facilitate collaboration. But I guess we can work on creating an idea for a committee that is more, because you are the president of the now, you are on the committee.
Yes, I think if there was a way that the heads of all these organizations and, you know, liaisons from the SA could get together, it's hard for me to understand why they don't already do that and try to collaborate. But I don't know if that's really something that we could write into our bylaws, something that the FA would mandate, but I think it's more something that we need to have a chair of the environmental committee who's really committed and willing to reach out to them.
So,
I mean, maybe we could add some language that the committee chair shall, make the best efforts to reach out.
So I'm going
to,
that's time, but since this is new business, I would recommend not moving it to business of the day and figuring out some type of language, since you both seem to be on the same page with that. Next on the speaker list is Representative Zolman.
So I guess two things. One, to just add to that, and I mean, in a lot of cases too, there are hub folks on already staff on other committees. So in Dining, for example, we have two people who are representing the sustainability community who sit in and address the issues from that perspective, and they happen to also be the people coordinating the composting initiatives and that sort of thing. So they wear a lot of hats, but we have to remember that there are, I mean, the environmental community is huge, and there are people in the hub who think that that is the hub, and then there are groups outside the hub that don't align themselves with the hub or whatever. But in other cases, we already have people involved in other SA initiatives and committees who are on hubs. So there's a lot of intermingling. But I guess to shift gears to the CIT committee, I guess this name was the one that was approved by Ted Dodge, because I know part of his initiative, that's my first question, because I know part of his initiative was to do a lot of renaming when it came to IT stuff on campus. I spoke with Don Seavey a couple weeks ago. The meeting was originally supposed to be about technologies as relating to dining, but it branched out into a really big conversation about Ted Dodd's new initiatives and kind of where SA fits into all this, and I was told not to bring it up because it needed approval from Ted Dodge, but I guess to mention it since it's already part of the conversation, there is a new mobile governance board that's going to be emerging on campus, and one of the CIO's big initiatives is trying to integrate mobile into Cornell's community. And so during our conversation, he told me that they had decided to have SA at the table, and they want SA to have a seat on the mobile governance board. So I told him about our committee structure, and I told him about the way we operate and have liaisons, and he didn't want to talk details too much yet because he wanted to get a better idea from Ted what the situation would be. But I guess also just to keep in the back of our mind, like, mobile is going to be a huge thing, and I think that this committee could be a really good resource for providing the input that the university is asking for, and the chair of probably the person who's going to want to sit on the mobile governance board as well. That's kind of just my spiel.
Yeah, so I'm going to respond to that. Adam and I had a meeting with Ted on Tuesday where basically we sat down for half an hour and we're just talking about everything that the SA could do, and he pitched a lot of ideas to us. The first being e-textbooks, how the pilot program is expanding. Also doing mobile apps, talking about being able to have an app to get your grades on your phone, having an app to be able to go to Student Center to look at bursar, registrar, etc. And he really wanted to work with the SA, especially because we have the CIT community to work as the group that really is his focus group and helps him identify other students to reach out to, ways that we could get out surveys, ways that we could be reaching out to all different types of students and how they learn through technologies. And he wants CIT to be at the center and the forefront. Adam and Melissa, the incoming Vice President of Internal Operations, will be working to identify the new CIT chair, and they're basically going to be working with Ted very closely, as well as this entire committee, to make sure that comes to the forefront. So I don't know if you want to expand.
Nope.
You got it. All right. Is there anyone else on the speakers list? Okay, so we're going to bring this up to...
One other thing I want to add.
Executive Vice President Gitlin.
One last thing to add. Even though this is only committees in here, if you have any other suggestions for bylaw changes, go through the bylaws. John will send it out, but they're really easy to find online. And make suggestions, because we can make more changes to the bylaws if you think they're necessary, if you think it'll make the operation of the SA more efficient. So really take a look at it over the next week. Thank you.
All right, last resolution, Resolution 45, Student Assembly support of tiered CUID replacement system by Representative Scalfo and Trustee Flores.
Can I add one thing? Sorry.
Yep.
That's kind of big. So the last thing is therefore resolve clause on here. It says that if necessary, the VP of internal operations to lead a yearly review of the committees in order to ensure that we just wanted to point that out there to everyone. That's also a change that we're making that we didn't pilot.
Yeah. And make sure that the amendments that you are going to do get sent out and resent out
okay.
for the next agenda.
To everyone before we end.
Yeah. All right. You guys have 2 minutes
we
to present. Okay, that's nice. I hope you feel better. Okay, let's go. We don't have a lot of time.
Professionalism.
So, honestly, we're not going to be voting on this until our final student assembly meeting because the registrar doesn't want us and she's really the person who has to make these changes. She wants to attend that meeting and give her a little spiel.
I know.
But pretty much it's straightforward. Right now, ID charge plus $40 for the first time, and that was put in place to be sort of a preventative measure to encourage responsibility with ID cards. We have seen a decrease in ID cards replacements, but we're not sure if people aren't getting them replaced because of the fee. It is pretty $40. And to some students, that means that they have to get a job to pay for that. So we're looking into how many repeat offenders there are, and we'll have more information by our last assembly meeting. Can we propose amendments now, or just we'll amend that later?
I'd say we
propose it now, but amend later.
Okay. We just want to say that it was 2006. Students used to pay for ID replacements up until 2006. When that student trustee made a nickel and diming case to the Board of Trustees, which allowed for one free ID replacement from 2006 to 2011. And now we're using partly the same argument, but using a tiered system where the first one wouldn't be free. It would be $10 or $15 or $20 and to go up with a cap. So that's not it.
All right. Anyone on the speakers list? It's going to be brought up next week as well.
And then the next week.
And it will be brought up in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Representative Kay.
This is a little bit not. It's kind of related. So it has to do with the Greek system, I guess. The party system and how you now have to be ID to get in for like houses. And I think that one of the issues that people in the Greek community saw was like it's freshmen that were getting IDs from the older kids, and that the $40 is a deterrent from the kids trying to meet their freshman friends in or something. But that, I don't think that makes
sense. I don't, Jesse didn't bring it up as a concern when we had talked
about it. I don't think that it's, I've just heard that. I don't personally believe it.
The other thing is when you get a replacement ID, your original ID is deactivated, so you wouldn't be able to use it.
Okay, let's keep the Roberts here. Next on the speakers list is Representative Breeden.
Awesome. I think it's great. I'm glad to see that. But I just had a really minor comment at the bottom. It says like respectfully submitted. It says Peter Scalpo 12.
This is for some reason not the one that I picked. Whatever his name is, get with.
Alright. Well, we'll make sure when you come back in 2 weeks to make sure that that's okay.
I will show you. Okay.
And also,
I am graduating here.
Alright, so we're running out of time. Last on the speakers list is Vice President of Finance Nicoletti.
Just question why. Why do staff and faculty not directly pay for their replacements? Do they pay for it through another route, or
yes.
Were they more responsible and therefore not levied with this $40?
Yes and no. What happens is when a faculty member or staff member loses their ID card, they go to registrar, they get an ID card, they're not charged. Their human resources department is charged, and then depending on what department, they will have their own repercussions based on what department it is. So if that is having to reimburse the HR department, or whether it's a slap on the wrist or verbal reprimand.
Is it more often than not a pay cut? Or is it
it's more often than not a pay cut.
Okay.
distracted people.
Next on the speakers is Representative Muir.
So why is it that $0 for each card as opposed to $16 for the first card lost? So I don't know. I think that the way that you're proposing it would benefit those who use their card more than once. Like, I feel like if someone loses their card, it's going to be a big accident. Take out a jail card, but then everyone else is going to, the average person only loses their card once because they're responsible with it.
No, I understand. The cards themselves actually cost about $35 to make. Because of the proximity sensors inside of them, the lamination is very expensive and the machine is very expensive to keep on buying the laminate and to operate the machine, and then the extra $5 is what we call labor fee. So it's exactly how much it costs to make the ID card. However, we do pay tuition that fuels the registration office. So that would be the argument. And the way it is one time you lose $15, let's say, arbitrary number, then the second time it's 30 and just keeps on going up because you're becoming irresponsible.
All right, that's
10. And that's all I have.
Yeah, last on the speakers list. Oh, okay, we have three more. Next on the speakers list is Trustee Everson.
Yeah, I was just going to say that this is something that affects Wall Street, so I think probably try to run it by President Cortez, Evan Cortez, and the UFA, to probably get them to sign on to it, and give them more
All right, and next on the speakers list is Vice President of Outreach, Tripp Eisen.
I just was wondering really quickly, how is the registrar funded? Because that could be a big concern in terms for them, why they're charging students. And if it's not coming basically directly from tuition money, that's why they would be doing it.
Right. So the money just comes out of the general operating budget at Cornell. The reason this kind of problem exists is based on the student trustees' actions in 2006. The registrar's office was told to just stop charging for first-time replacements, but not given any sorts of funding to cover it. So they had to just cut their operations back by about $40,000, and that was only going to last so long. And so in the recent recession, when every department got cut, they were like, we can't afford this $40,000 cost anymore. So we're trying to find other ways to do it that still have the benefit of giving people somewhat of a free pass with their first one while punishing those that are totally irresponsible with their ID.
All right, last on the speakers list is Executive Vice President Gitlin.
I just want to point out that Scuffle has been doing a really good job in following through on all of the ideas and promises of representatives that don't end up following through with those promises, like garbage cans and ID cards. So really nice job.
Great job.
Magical job.
All right, so I know a ton of us are going to Ron Paul and the tickets are now, so I'm officially going to close this meeting. I would like to just say that everyone should really consider SAFC guidelines, very important to pass for next week, and it's definitely something that's going to affect all students, so please keep that in mind.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.